Hello, this is Michael Martin with the National Wood Flooring Association, and you're listening to the Real Answers Podcast. Today, we have two legends to listen to. First, our co-host, Chris Zizza. How are you today, Chris?
Came on. CNR There's only one legend in the room, though. Let's be clear, and it's not me.
Yes, it's Michael Martin. No, kidding. Our real legend is Sprigg Lynn, Universal Floors. How are you doing today, Sprigg?
Fantastic. I'm ready to go.
Absolutely.
All right, let's do it.
We've been trying to, hey, if you're driving around today, I hope you're having a great day. Sprigg and I have run into each other so many different times at various expos or surfaces or wherever we've been traveling. Sometimes it's on the Hill with the Hardwood Federation. And we keep saying we're going to do a podcast. So I'm thrilled that today's the day we're finally going to get it done. Sprigg, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate
it. Right on.
Appreciate it.
I got a question for you. And guys, this is what we're trying to solve. 2023 Real Answers, what we're trying to do is help you aim the arrow a little better and actually zero in on the target so you can get to the point that you guys are all trying to get to. One thing that, you know, Lenny, myself, Sprigg, Lenny Hall, Steve from SVB, the thing we probably hear the most when we're walking around, and Sprigg, I know you have this happen to you. Somebody who's a new company will come up and say, what did you do to get to here? And so that's what we're going to talk about today. There are things you run into as you're building your company. And probably the biggest obstacle out of the gate is, you know, organizing the cash flow. Then the next problem is I don't have enough labor. Then the next problem is all my customers are terrible. You know, and I'd like to say worse than terrible, but what did you run into as, forgive me, your third generation?
Yes. Yep.
So what were the pitfalls and what are the things you do still today that you've never strayed from doing? And it's one of the success stories of why you're where you are.
Well, I think we'll be soon on 72nd year. And that means you got to make payroll every Friday. You got to pay your vendors. You got to produce decent work. But I think is if you come up with a system, you have to have a system. And if you follow your system and always improve your system, and it doesn't matter if you're a one-man crew or a 100-man crew, if you have a proper system, you can close it and open it like an accordion. Mm-hmm. And it's much easier to survive. You know, when you hit hard times, you got to cut fast, make some quick decisions. So cash flow is king. You cannot pay your bills or your men or women without the cash flow. Some people lose that. The cash flow is super important. That's your lifeblood.
Speaking of cash flow, do you have at CNR, we have a specific person who's in charge of collections and sends me a report every Thursday on the collections report. Do you guys have, somebody's job?
Every Monday, my brother and I review the collections along with the office manager, and we stay on top of it. You got to stay on top of it. If you give someone a week, then they might take 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And if there's a small problem, like a little piece of shoe molding missing or some little thing, you need to jump on that like a tiger. Get it done, get it fixed, because you want the money. Every week or two that goes by, you don't collect your money. It's that much harder to collect your money.
Yeah, so it's funny you say that. If there's a shoe molding or a threshold or a nosing, something's missing. We've had collection calls, and so when collection calls happen on Thursday, it gets entered into the notes, and I'll read the notes, and it says, client waiting for us to finish. It makes me want to snap, and it is usually something like that. I call them up. I go, what is it? They go, well, they added a threshold, and it's not in yet. I go, when are we doing it?
Yeah, so you have a $50 or whatever it is.
No, you're right.
It's a threshold holding up $5,000.
Precisely.
So we link our sales department with the bottom line. It has to be collected before they get their commission. So we got the carrot and the stick. And that's the way we set it up. We went through boom and bust many times, and we found that to improve the cash flow, we have to connect that person's paycheck to a certain degree to the cash flow. Now, the guys in the field, they're getting paid. They're getting paid every Friday, or a major draw in their work, or if they're getting paid by the hour or the percentage. But that's very important. But the sales team, they just need to keep their fingers on the pulse with their customer.
No, I agree with that. Let me shift gears, and collections is a key. I agree. You also got to keep your payables in order, but collections and payables, it's exactly what he's talking about, cash flow. But I had a young guy yesterday come up to me, and this is what he said, and I'm curious as to how you might have answered it, Sprig. He said, I don't know if you noticed this about me. We'd already been talking about 10, 15 minutes. And he said, I don't know if you noticed this about me, but I wrestle with whether or not I'm a businessman or a craftsman. And he said, my inner demon is that I want to be the best craftsman I can be, but I have a feeling it's going to make me a bad businessman.
Sometimes a so-called craftsman might be better off working for someone and let him do his trade and enjoy life. But everyone doesn't have the same goals as you, me, or Michael, or whoever. Some have different goals. Some just want to create beautiful floors and have job security and get paid. And if that's what makes them happy, then move toward that. But you have to have a strong sales department, service department, and an office. If all three are clicking, you're going to make some money.
Yes.
You can have a weakness in one and maybe two, and you'll limp along, but you're not going to be hitting all eight cylinders unless you have all three clicking, and you never settle with, okay, everything's good. You always got to improve the weakest link. Always, always think, what can I do better? What can I do faster? How can I be more organized? If you have some downtime in your work, don't say, oh my gosh, we got downtime. What are we going to do? Go get organized. Organization, we like to say we're moving toward being military ready. Everything, because, you know, time is money. And the more organized you are, it's fantastic for the bottom line.
Yeah. So the funny thing about organization that I think gets missed the most is the small companies think they don't have to be as organized because they don't have as much volume running through the door. But I disagree with the guys that tell me, oh, I don't have to worry about that yet. I'm not big enough. And I go, wrong. You need to worry about it now. Get organized. You could not have answered that question better. Because if you don't focus on your AR, focus on your AP, focus on your schedule. I showed him our schedule and his eyes were popping because, well, because he couldn't fathom. And I'm not patting myself on the back, but he couldn't fathom how many thousands of feet are pumping through our door weekly. And this is, you know, because he's a small company. And I go, this is how you have to organize even where you are now.
Well, how do you find that you can't handle the volume as you grow if you don't have the system in place? You don't want to build the system after the fact, because then that makes it even worse to try to stay up with, let alone be organized to grow your business. So the growth has to come from having the right framework in place, right?
How do you make a schedule if you don't already know how many feet a day you can sand or install? Because you have to base a schedule on that. If you get excited about a job, and this goes back to his, you know, the axe he's grinding right now is, am I a craftsman or am I a businessman? The real answer is you're both. You want to do the best job you can at a steady, even pace, and you want to make money doing it. And if you're adding extra levels to be that super craftsman and you're not charging for it, well, then you're hurting yourself. You're crushing your bottom line, by the way. Find the happy medium. If you're going to be a three, this guy, he cuts four times. I don't think you need to cut a floor four times. Or the real answer to that is the floor will tell you if it needs to be cut four times.
And your price should reflect that. If you sell a good, better, best system, and you're selling the best and everyone else is selling the good and they're beating you up and you're not getting the work, then you have to adjust what you're doing.
Exactly.
You be aware of your surroundings. It's just some people, they've been trained to just X amount of square foot, or we're going to add this much on the wood and that's it. If you have a more expensive product, you got more exposure and you have to charge more money.
Yep. So let's talk about the expensive product aspect. So he was this particular individual, and I really liked meeting with him because he got my eyes open on what some of the
smaller companies. Do you have initials for this person?
Please?
Do you have their initials? No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
You know what?
No, I got you.
His name was Mondo Fraschetti, and but here's the thing. What I said, he shows me, he brings up his QuickBooks, and we went through a couple of his estimates, and it doesn't matter what products he's using, but he's using a two-component urethane, and it was very expensive, but all two components are very expensive. So, but here's the thing. We use two-component urethanes, but it's a line item on the spreadsheet. Yes. And what we write is, we usually capitalize the whole word optional, every letter, capital letters, optional. And then it will say, let's just say, for example, it happens to be Bonotraffic HD. And then it will say the square footage and the cost. Okay. X amount per foot. This young man, he's using his two component system. It was on, he does a garbage bag test that we've done on the show, and he's showing me, and I'm going, geez, your square foot costs are up so high. Why? And we started looking at it. And when we got into how much he was paying, his cost to do the job, I said, why don't you line item that urethane? And he's like, well, you know, I don't think I could get it. And I go, well, let's try it this way. Why don't you offer single component urethane on every estimate and it's included in the price? And then optional for high traffic commercial grade two component urethane is X amount of dollars. Let the consumer tell you they want the added protection. And then they're going to pay for it.
100%. And structuring your contract properly is very important. And some people, if their floor is on their last leg, so you'll offer the finest finish as an option, and you sell it to them that way.
And let them pay for it.
Let them pay for it.
So this young man was convinced that he cannot raise his prices. He's at as high as he can go in his marketplace. And you're driving around, whoever you are out there right now, and you heard what I just said. Everyone says this to us all the time. My market won't support that price point.
Well, when they raise gas, you pay the gas. They raise the wood, you pay for the wood. You got to ask for it. But now, if you have more work, you know what to do with. And I've heard people say, I'm booked up for 6 months.
Right.
Well, you need to raise those prices up. You double your price and you're still getting the work, maybe you got to triple your price. That doesn't happen too much, but you have to structure your price on the workload that you can do. And you look up what we call the board and see if you have some spots that are open. So you have to adjust it a little bit.
Yeah. But to that same token, you're dropping your price when you have no work. You know, you're not going to drop it below where you're going to lose money, but you need to keep your guys in the trucks sanding floors. So your price is always a moving number. But the point I make about the two-component urethane being an optional item is this. He kept saying, I can't raise my price. I can't raise my price. My market won't support it. So all we did was move urethane from included to an optional add-on. And the single component is significantly less money. Your consumer will now decide to spend more money. And if they don't want to spend it, you don't have to throw in the two component.
Yeah, we have upgrades for natural, for light to medium stains, and dark and pastel colors.
Water pop.
It's water pop, all additional. And sometimes you can go in with a very reasonable price. And by the time you walk out the door, your profit margin has gone up quite a bit. We always say on repairs that a lot of them, we rough sand the floor, get the raw wood, and we'd like to walk the job to see if you would like some boards repaired. And most of the time they do. And just repair work alone, people run away from repair work. There's good money in repair work. Every job needs some sort of repair.
Yeah. So this individual doesn't, he does his own installations. He does his own sanding, and he wanted to put down on paper how much he thinks his new hires are going to make 3 years from now.
And that depends on those people.
I told him, I go, I don't think that's a very
good idea. So what if that fella you're talking about gets in a car wreck and breaks his legs? He's out of business. So if you can get a system down And you can, once you're comfortable with it, and you can add a crew, not just add crews to add crews, but a profitable crews, then maybe you're on vacation and you're making money. That's the key. Make money when you're really not physically working.
Yeah. So the answer, I couldn't agree more. I got off the tools physically, I think it was 2001. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've coated a floor in, you know, shit, two decades, you know. But that's my point. I meet with my guys know what they're doing, we reward them, they get paid quite well, and they're happy. We're creating longevity. Right now, the next step for CNR Flooring is, who's going to take over operations in the field and do what I'm doing, because I want to do a little less now. And this is 37 years later, by the way. But that young man who's third year in business right now has to start finding his first, his second, and his third employee. And he needs to create a sales goal of adding whatever the bottom line, you know, let's grow $100,000 in sales this year. And his eyes light up. He's like, I don't know how I'm going to do that. I go, but it starts by finding your first employee and then sell more. And before you know it, you'll be going, geez, I need another guy.
What's your thought on credit cards, taking credit cards?
We take credit cards. I need to make it as easy as I can for my consumer to want to pay me. Does the 3% hurt? I don't think it hurts, but it certainly damages my margin. Do you pass your fee on, or do you eat it?
We used to eat it for years.
Okay.
And we said, you know what? I think the highest fee we pay is 3.1,
yep,
which certain types of credit cards are higher. And we said, look, this is a convenience fee. We put it right on there, 3.1. And I would say we lost about 40% of the credit card payments, but the rest of them paid in check. So we thought the sky was going to fall. Oh my gosh, they're not going to do this. But then the credit cards actually are good because we do not have to chase the money.
Yeah.
And we have them sign the contract that says they accept payment in full
when
we finish. And we went to the credit card company and said, what can we do to protect ourselves with credit card chargebacks or things? And they gave us some sound advice that would be ironclad. And we don't have a problem with it. It worked out great for us.
That's interesting. I haven't gone to the point where we're going to do the convenience fee. I do like the idea of calling it a convenience fee. I think even if I were a consumer and it was convenience fee in front of me, I don't know that that would, I don't think it would upset me. So I think I might talk to my office about that little line item called convenience fee. And, you know, pass it on. But taking credit cards, it's increased how quickly we get paid. Our contract they do sign the contract that says the day the last coat goes down, we run your card. So that improves collections. I will say this. We had a merchant services consultant come in and analyze our merchant services, and then he went ahead and renegotiated our contract for a percentage of our contract. We pay him a pretty good fee monthly, but even with his fee right now,
it's
way lower. So you might want to look into having a merchant services consultant negotiate your deal, because they know things that we don't know that the bank might want to agree to. And we did that about a year and a half ago, and I keep saying, are we still paying them? You know, because I think, is he really earning it? But it's still less money. So.
And some of these guys, they get caught up in a lot of frivolous sales or going to places where, if they even get the job, they're not going to make too much. So we have a lot of people calling us about, I got a scratch in the floor. I got a bad board. You're highly recommended. So you don't want to just say, no, I'm not going out there, or that's $2,500 or whatever your price is. So we went to a local plumber and we said, what is your time and material charge? to go out there. And believe me, they have the most, 15 minutes here, two men, drive time.
Yep.
They're making money. Those plumbers, they're good people with that.
But you're right.
So we basically asked him and said, here, can we borrow this? And we did. And so we put it, so when people call, and they call on a daily basis, and I said, that falls under, we don't know the scope of work, it falls under time and material. Time and material charge, and they put it on their credit card, and they approve the charge, and we charge them each day, and we'll go as far as they want. Now, maybe 75% of the people walk away from it, but the other 25, maybe they're selling an $8 million apartment, and they got to get that crack threshold fixed so they can close the deal, and they'll pay it. So it was a polite way of cleaning that up without telling the people just, I'm not going out there.
So I like that. And, this is one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, is so I can pick up tidbits for CNR Flooring too. But let me ask you this. What's the job you walk away from?
Well, a lot of people can sense a customer that it's best to walk away. We always say, don't be the library, be the bookstore. Somebody will pump you full of, want all your information, and then just shop you. And we say, we'll give them enough information to know that we know what we're talking about and who we are. And if they want the rest of the information, they're going to have to engage in a contract. Same with samples.
I was just going to jump on samples. That's where we draw the line. The way we phrase it, when we say, look, I'm not trying to be rude, but send me a picture of what you're thinking and I'll quote the project. If we're going to go to contract, I'll do as many samples as you like. But we don't make samples if we don't have a deposit.
Yeah. And if someone's on the fence or they're not sure, we say, look, give us a good faith deposit of $1,000. And then you have a decision. Do you want to say, I'll credit the whole thing, or I'll credit 50% of it? Or even when it comes to insurance estimates, we'll say we'll be glad to give you a really nice insurance estimate because you have to get three of them. But we charge X to do it. Maybe it's $250.
I had a client say to me, we think we want to use you. We don't know what color it's going to be. I'm not going to go to contract, but can I pay you for your samples? Is that agreeable to you? And I was like, is it interesting? I never had that happen before. And I said, I'll tell you what, I'll do one better. We're going to charge you $300 for samples. And if we get the job, I'm going to comp the $300 towards the project. How do you like that? She said, would you like a credit card now? And when can the mechanic come? I said, my office will take the credit card and schedule when somebody can be there and have what we've now adopted as a color session. And that's one of the little things that we went into. And it's how you, as the owner of the company, don't have to get upset over, because we've been there. How many times have you done the sample, given them the formula, and you don't get the job? And you're like, I knew it. It's happened to me over the years, and this stopped that problem.
Yeah, so we mask what our samples really are. We're not really telling them exactly what we're doing or our process. We just said, if you like what you see, we can reproduce this, which there's nothing wrong with that.
I know guys out there that they just number the sample, and then they got to go back to their chart, and the formula's over there. I'll tell you that CNR Flooring, we're not organized enough to do that. If we kept this formula somewhere else, we'd freaking lose it. And then we got to recreate it. So I just write down what it is.
Well, people are going to have to figure out formulas because you got that LVP or the plastic floors, and the stairs aren't plastic. The nosings aren't plastic.
Yep.
And they're very unique colors, and they're not easy. Sometimes you have to use reactives or different process to get them, but that can almost get you the job right there because you can be dialing in the color on a tread from your shop.
Yep. Quick shift on estimating to a point where you got the fancy job. Here comes the blueprint showed up and somebody goes, hey, Sprague, we got this blueprint. It's pretty damn fancy. Is there a formula you use to get to the number for the consumer? And when you quote off a blueprint that's got, you know, a Versailles on an angle and so forth and so on, are you per square foot? Are you per piece? Or do you look at it and say, I know my team is going to be there for a week and we need this much money?
It depends on the job. If it's historic restoration, sometimes it's hard to put a number on it. It's almost like once you open it up, you'll see unforeseen issues. But when we're bidding a job, you're just getting a bird's eye view through the plans. You really don't have to. Once you get on the job, you have to adjust it, or the herringbone has to be a certain size. So we can get them a very close approximate price. And we put on the contract, it's important to put the date when it was revised. So you're reading it off July 1st, 2023, and you know that this reflects what you see right there. Because many times you get on the job and they revise it and they try to hold you to it. And so we get a pretty close approximate price until we always say we need a field visit. We need to physically measure it and fine tune that. Because you'll see all kinds of problems. There could be a high beam. We structure it so we say subfloor preparation to be determined.
Yep.
And all working areas empty by others. That means anyone but me.
Yeah, so we write by others also.
So, you know, they go, who's that? I said, anyone but me.
You know? Exactly. What does by others mean? I go, it means I'm not doing it. You are, or somebody is, which means I'm not paying for it to get done.
I mean, you could fill volumes in contracts of what you're not going to do, but you got to at least say what you're going to do and put some of the main points in there. Repairs additional if necessary.
Yep. One thing to remember when you guys are doing these estimates – don't be afraid to charge for that project that has a few of the different items. You know, it's not a bread and butter floor. It's going to be unique. You know, you're going to run into some stuff and you have to put those fees in there. We had a gentleman call me and say, you know, we really want you to do this job, but you're so expensive. I go, excuse me? And he goes, well, you weren't three times the money. And I go, do you want to know what that tells me? This was a very fancy job, new construction, a lot of patterns. I said, that tells me that I'm the only one who understood the job. If you're telling me that I am three times the other bidders, those guys need to go back to the plan and understand the project. Because if you hire one of them, they're going to get up to my number later and you're not going to see it coming. Would you like me to requote it, or do you want to do a job site meeting? And he goes, you know what? No, I think that makes sense. And we'll call you back. Hung up. Next day, call me. We're going with your numbers. We had a meeting. The client agrees. You're probably the only one who understood it.
We have it a lot where the builder's obviously trying to get the best price he can.
It's his job.
But once we meet the homeowner, they're like, we got to go with these people.
Yeah.
So
those on-site meetings work well.
You're selling yourself, and be prepared for it. But sales is a super, super important part of it. Just as important as getting the job done and looking in and working the clerical work, sales is right up there.
Can we back up to the beginning where we started talking about the difference between a craftsman and a businessman? Have you ever seen services? So let's say, for example, you're a really good craftsman, but you really don't want to run the business. Are there services out there that will help you do that?
Well, I mean, you can bring in... You know what? I don't know that it's a service as much as you need. There's a consultant out there, and I think consultant's a dirty word, and I'm a consultant. Imagine that. But there are companies that can offer you advice on the direction you want to take your company. I know a contractor in New Jersey that when I went in to look at samples at his place, he goes, hey, do you mind if we have a meeting about this job? It was a unique job, which is why I drove all the way to New Jersey and sit in with him, make sure the final product was going to look correctly. And this guy who I had never seen before sat in on the meeting, and he had things to say. And when the meeting was over, we were comfortable. I got the quote the next day, and we did go with this guy. It was a very high-end pre-finished project. And I said, hey, who was that guy? He goes, I hired him to help me organize the company. He's probably going to be around for, you know, 3-4 months, mm-hmm. and then we're going to get together quarterly and see if it's working. So there are, you know, whether it's an accountant or a bookkeeper or a strategist that can help you point your arrow, yeah, it's out there.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, if we could somehow capitalize on the knowledge of people who do understand the business side and maybe don't love the craft piece as much, like, is there a way to, you know, as people start retiring or looking, maybe there's NWFA members out there who could do that, who could come in alongside somebody younger who and mentor them on the business side or even help them run the business for a while until they're up to speed and they have it off and running?
I just want to see the guys. I hate hearing I'm too small, so I don't have to worry about that yet. I hear that all the time. And I just keep saying, you guys have heard me say this before, be the best professional you can be. And even if your company's small, act like a big company. Put all the things that are real in a business in place.
Yeah, you got to know your numbers. People don't know their numbers. And a craftsman, is there always that elaborate, fancy job that needs a craftsman?
No.
So you have to fill in your work with basic work. So maybe a craftsman starts working toward getting one leg out of it by heavily either doing the fancy work and have someone else being supervised to do the other work so he can have his foot in both worlds, because he might be happy just doing the work, but he might be able to slowly wean himself off a good bit of it so he's not there all day, 8-10 hours. He can go there, he can snap the lines, he can get it straight, he can come back, supervise it, he can bend the wood and still be part of it, because that's his life, that's what he loves, that's his passion.
Yep.
But what is your exit plan? Mm-hmm. Your exit plan is work, toil away until your body is shot like a offensive lineman in the NFL. You know, you got to have an exit plan somewhere.
I had a talk before I came out to the show, so just last week, with one of my leads. He's been with me 23 years, and we've been talking about, we're going to sit down, we're going to go to dinner, we're going to talk about a little longevity here. And I've been so busy getting ready for the show and doing some other things that I thought we were going to go to dinner last week and we didn't. But I ran into him at the store and I go, hey, come over here. And he comes over and I go, I took out my phone and on the notes page of my phone, I go, I want to show you what I've been thinking about. I go, I know we haven't met yet, but these are some of the things. And my notes said, what's Eddie's 20-year plan? Okay, the guy we're talking about works for me. His name's Eddie. And I said, Ed, I wasn't sure on the 20 years. So can I go, how old are you? I knew he was somewhere in his 40s. He goes, I'm 43. I go, perfect. I'm 57. Okay. This is exactly what I thought when I wrote, what's Ed's 20-year plan? Because I can tell you right now, Chris says his 20-year plan is not to be at CNR Flooring when I'm 77. But Eddie can still be there when he's 63. That's, yeah, I'll be 57 next in 2 weeks. That's 6 years. 63 for me is 6 years away. Will I still be doing hardwood floors in 6 years? Yeah, I will. But I'm talking to Eddie about the next 2 decades and then his plan from there. That's the kind of longevity you want to strive towards building.
I don't think that question's really asked or brought up, and everyone's working on the job that they're doing right there. And that's important to plant that seed. Really important.
I want him excited about the next 2 decades. He's already worked for me for 23 years. But I also see that he could be somebody that takes over that company. I don't have sons. And, you know, my kids are great. One's a fantastic school teacher. I'm so proud of her. And the other one's out there doing her thing in Nashville. She's in sales, working sales and marketing, working for Red Bull. Neither of those two are coming to hardwood flooring. So my company's not going to get passed down. You know, I wish I could look at and have a third generation of Zizza, but I think his name might be Eddie.
And then there's other people in the business that might not have maybe the sales skills or they won't be as sociable as other people, and they just, that isn't their expertise. Yep. So we've been looking to create a program where we're going to learn how to repair equipment. And we can take a guy off the turf 1 day, 3 days, whatever he feels comfortable, and learn another aspect of the flooring business. He's still involved with it. He's still smart. He still wants to be engaged. But, you know, I told one of the fellas that this is what we're going to do because you seem to be very mechanically inclined. And he was like, was happy. He was like, I didn't, you know, I get up sometimes and I know I can't do this. So I said, you know, we can produce some parquets and herringbone and it'll be less stress on your body. So some people just work people till they're gone and they replace them.
Yeah, I agree. Some do that. I don't want to do that.
I like a good team around.
Yeah. I like to use the analogy, sooner or later, you got to feel like you got to get off the field and become a coach. You know, most of my analogies are wrapped around sports. And I go, and our body as a wood flooring professional gets beat up just like a professional athlete. Mm-hmm. And sooner or later, you need to be a coach. And some of the best players have been the most outstanding coaches. So think about that in your longevity plan. You know, who are you going to elevate towards being a coach or being a manager or, like Sprigg said, jumping in and, you know,
and a lot of these craftsmen, they need to diversify a little bit. Maybe go into historic restoration because it's tedious, it's less demanding on your body, and you have less competition. So we diversified. We don't just, you know, at one time we were doing major new construction, you know, 150 mechanics, slew of salespeople,
yep.
And it's a big money-eating machine.
It costs a lot to run that machine.
Economy goes down. Yeah, money goes in, money goes out. When the money doesn't go in, it's a big problem. So we've come down quite a bit, around 50, and a happy medium.
Yep.
And we're happy with it. But you got to diversify. So we got into a little bit of sports floors.
Okay.
But we didn't go to the school, the public school. We went to the nice private schools in our area. They're willing to pay a little bit more for the detail and the service. And then we do historic restoration. We do cosmetic touch-ups. That's another thing. Someone can gravitate into cosmetic touch-ups.
It's a little profit center. We use the Wood Doctor Repair Kit by Koenig and by Mohawk. It's a combination of those two kits is my one kit. There's just better little trinkets of each kit, and combined they make the best kit.
It can mean collecting your money or not, or getting the job or not.
So I fill a dent, $350.
Yeah. No, I got good at it because my father would tell me, don't come back without the check. You got to go fix it. So I had to do whatever I had to do. But I think it's important that people learn cosmetic touch-ups because we took so on sales, say we're going after a builder that does good work and he pays his bills.
Yep.
And everyone knocks on his door and say, hi, I'm Sprigg Lynn. We do fantastic work. We'll do all the bragging in the world. So we took a different approach.
Yep.
We said, give us a few of your problems, mostly cosmetic touch-ups.
Yep.
If I can make them go away, you pay me this reasonable price. If I don't make them go away and the customer doesn't sign off on, you don't owe me a dime.
I do that too.
And I go on my way. So I think it's a win-win situation for everyone. But at the end of the day, I want your work.
Right.
And I've gained some good customers. You imagine you get one customer. That one customer may be the revenue for $500,000 a year, $200,000 a year.
I couldn't agree more.
And everyone's just like, how can we get more customers? Take care of a few of their problems. Go in there with the biggest smile on your face. Good old-fashioned manners and a smile don't cost you a dime.
That is fantastic.
And these other companies that are working for these builders, after a while, they've been with them 20 years, they really don't care as much. Then all of a sudden you go in there and this customer's a nightmare. Well, you only have to engage with the customer for a day, a half a day, and you can put on your happy face for half a day and take care of that.
You just made me remember something. And so if you're listening to this, here's a piece of advice for you. You don't want to become the subcontractor to the builder who's become complacent and just feels like, hey, I'm here and I'm going to get the job anyway. I've been doing this guy's work for 15 years. You need to make them feel like a new relationship every day. They need to know. Your customer has to know that you're important to them.
Yeah, when was the last time someone sincerely thanked somebody for the job? We thank them every – we really appreciate the work. Thank you.
Yeah.
And you look them in the eye and you shake their hand, and people like that.
Old-fashioned values. Imagine that. That's how you keep a company and keep a customer. Well,
a lot of the newer, younger guys coming into it, and girls, they know the IT. They know all the media. They know that. But some, not all, are lacking those good old core handshakes and talks and
where's be able the personal to engage, touch?
And be able to engage with the customer.
I like it. And, that's good stuff. That's why we're here at the NWFA in Milwaukee, that personal touch. We had great meetings here. The show's been amazing. And the one thing we got was that face-to-face opportunity to see the excitement of a client looking at your product and then moving on to turning it into an order. And that's the thing you need to do when you go into somebody's living room, you go into the builder's office, you get a blueprint. Sometimes, you know, they can email you the blueprint, but sometimes it's okay to pick them up and remind them who you are. We do that a lot. I'll go in and I'll say, hey, would it be okay? Do you have 10 minutes to go over the blueprint? And we roll them out on their conference table and we look at it. And all you're really doing is just engaging so that they go, hey, he gets it. He's in on the job. And then he goes and he tells his site super, yeah, we're good. This
the
is
one, the one place that we say we're not the the library, but we go to the architects or designers and say, we want to be your knowledge center.
Yep.
Let me create some samples for you. Let me make it easy. You go out and get some Lebanon strip 4-inch plank, and you make some turkey fans that are 3 feet long, and you got all the different colors and varieties, and you go in there and you hand this to them, and now you're not working with so-called the builder at the bottom line. You're working with the architect or designer, and they drive almost all the work.
Yeah. By the way, we do. I like the idea of giving away those, he calls them a turkey fan. I never heard it called that, but I know exactly what you mean. You fan it out and those are the samples.
Supersized though.
Yeah, I get it. And I like the idea. Look up online. If those of you, you know, some people going, Ziz, you're so old, you're still using a scale. You know, well, guess what? I haven't sat down and learned how to use Blue Point or whatever the hell the software is to read the blueprint for you. But what I do is I've given away a small little tape measure. On one side is 1/8-inch scale, and on the other side, it's 1/4-inch scale. And on the outside of it, it's about the size of a silver dollar, and it's got my logo on it. And I give it to the architects, and I know they're using those. They keep them in their pocket, and every time he pulls it out, he's looking at my name.
Yeah, we give a goodie bag to every customer that's got the – let me go back giving it to them. But it has the floor pads. It has the cleaner, our private label cleaner. It has our 16-foot tape measure with their name on it. It has all the cleaning instructions. So we told the salespeople, look, instead of you trying to sell this every job, just add a $150 to the job and give it to them.
Oh, look at that. There's my
takeaway,
folks.
So we added it up and we said, okay, it costs us about $70. So you're making that times every single job. So we took that additional money, which is quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
And we said, we're gonna use this for new tools. If a guy needs a new Festool track saw, here you go. It's yours. It's beautiful. Yep. It's yours. But this way, we're not saying, did you give it to them? The guys, when they get their job ticket and they go there first day, they hand it to them in the satchel. It says Universal Floors on it. One time we were down at the White House and they were laying out a state dinner. And this guy was measuring the placemats exactly. I looked over there and said, son of a gun, he got a Universal Floors tape measure that I gave to the carpentry shop. So people will not throw away a tape measure.
No,
but when you said the scale on the back, that's freaking great. I'm going to try that one. But people will not throw away a tape measure. And we give so many away, it's crazy.
When I go to the, you know, we're here at a trade show for the industry, but when I go to like the design show or the Boston A&D, we'll have a show with architects, and I go and I run into quite a few of the architects that we do business with. He's like, I love your tape measure you gave me, or the sliding scale. And it's just a little piece of tidbit, but you're right. As soon as you said tape measure, I'm like, I'm totally doing that.
We even on some of our very large jobs, we'll create something out of their floor. Nice keepsake dovetail box.
Yep.
with if they live on a farm or whatever their estate is, we'll put it right there on the top, and we give them a little gift like that. We've done it with knives, nice knives, and we've carved out the wood, or if we're working in a historic building.
Yeah, we've done pocket knives. We've done that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, guys, Sprig, I appreciate you being here. I'd be remiss if I didn't say, is there a piece of it before we wrap this up? Because these guys are on a commute today on the way to the job, and I think they're pulled over because we've talked so long. But here's my question to you. If there was something you wanted to make sure you told that new company, or not even the new company, what do you want to give for advice that you don't want them to ever forget?
Well, number one, your work is your silent salesman. You do good work, that's it. People are going to recommend you and collect your money. And don't be ashamed or afraid to ask for your money.
You earned it.
If you write the clear terms, you earned it. They didn't drag you across the finish line. There's nothing wrong with asking for your money because you got to pay your bills.
Fantastic.
That's about it.
I'll tell you what, Sprig, let's have you back on another episode and talk about some of your historic renovations and talk about some of your favorite projects. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have plenty of those.
All right. I think our guys would love to hear some of those stories.
Did anyone pick up on that name drop a couple minutes ago? Because we were at, the White House.
Somebody got to do it. Well, look, hey, you get in those houses. I don't care if it's whatever job it is. Basically, once you get in there, it's you and the floor. It's a piece of wood.
Absolutely.
It's just in a different building.
Listen, it's great to have you on the show. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you what you do for the industry. And you listening out there, be the best professional you can be and keep it real. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Real Answers Podcast.
Come on.
All right, we're great.